What's up, my friends? Your backup plan is here, back again with another awesome, awesome show for you guys on Christmas grief. There isn't such a thing, is there, that we suffer with Christmas grief around the holidays? Nah, I just don't think that even exists. And that's why we've had three shows on this series this month. It's a hard one. It definitely is. How many people are listening out there that you walk in the shopping mall or the grocery store and you start hearing Christmas music and tears start rolling down your face and your cheeks? How about people asking you out on a nice potluck dinner or an afternoon during the holidays and you just can't seem to get yourself motivated to be happy about the holiday or be even happy to spend time with other people being happy? I think that's the whole problem when it comes down to this, don't you think? And if you are new here, welcome. Welcome to our show. Please like, share, and subscribe down here below. And you can see more of our shows coming up. We have a special guest on our show today, Dave Roberts, coming to you from New York. And he is a former addictions counselor. He's a podcaster as well. He is also a teacher, an author, and a bereavement support specialist. And he is a very special guest today. And it's our little secret guest because it's going to come to you from a man's point of view. So I'm so excited to be here and bring this to you guys today. My name is Teen again, if you are new here, and I am over here with Your Backup Plan app. I am the creator and developer of Your Backup Plan. I'm also a best-selling author of In the Blink of an Eye. Just like that, your life changes in a flash, in a blink of an eye. I can't even explain it to you unless you really realize how that resonates if you've had this experience. That you blink your eyes and your life is changed forever. I can't stress that enough. And if you are new here, we are on all podcast platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and of course, Pinterest as well. And we talk about real life stories on our show with really amazing guests and about their life-changing events in their life and how something happened or something changed their life, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse. But it's all this journey that we can all share with each other and talk about it to make just one little change for one person is always my goal with my guests. Just hopefully it resonates with someone and it helps somebody out. And that's my goal for each and every show. So welcome if you are coming back to our show. Thank you for doing that. We love you here and we'd love to have you. So let's get the party started and we'll bring on Dave in a quick second.
In the blink of an eye, life can change dramatically. On our podcast, Talking Taboo with Tina, we delve into these life-altering events with celebrities, authors, and everyday people just like you. You'll also discover Your Backup Plan app, a life organizing tool designed to prepare you for any unexpected circumstance. It's your safety net, taking the sting out of tragedy. Imagine a plan B that ensures your finances are safe, even in the worst case scenario. But it doesn't end there. Join our vibrant Facebook group for free webinars on backup planning and secure your future today.
Welcome back. Let's bring on Dave Roberts from beautiful New York. How's it going, Dave?
Tina's going very well. I have no complaints whatsoever today.
That's awesome. Well, I'm happy to have you here from beautiful New York. What's the weather like there today?
Actually, it's probably for upstate New York, we're having a heat wave. It's in probably the low 30s.
Oh, that's not bad.
And Christmas Day, we're supposed to be in the 50s, which is...
Oh, nice.
It's not going to be Christmas-like weather, but... I'm sure we'll be getting our share of snow later in the year because it's
it's a nice change, I'm sure, right?
It is. I can deal with 50 degree weather just about every day of the year, except for the summer. I like it a little bit warmer.
Absolutely, not too humid as well.
That's right.
So, Dave, I'm excited to have you on from a man's perspective on grieving over the holidays, during the holidays. And I know that you have a lot to talk about on this topic, of course. And I'm excited to get your story started. So where did it all start for you, Dave?
Well, Tina, as I mentioned, you know, prior to you know, the recording, I'm no stranger to loss. I have danced with grief. I've danced with death since I've been 5 years old. The first loss I recall experiencing was when my father abandoned me at the age of five and my mother left to raise me as an only child. I never saw my father again. I found out at the age of 14 that he had transitioned, and I use the term transition to, as other people would use the term, passed on or passed away or died. That's how I conceptualized death. He transitioned at the age of 41 in 1996. He died in a car accident in Philadelphia, and I never saw him again. From there, I experienced a transition of the maternal grandmother and maternal aunt who helped raise me along with my mother. My mother, numerous friends, family members, pets. I've transitioned seven pets during my lifetime, and just a variety of different losses. But the loss that catapulted me head first into the world of death, dying, and bereavement, and caused me to really, take a look at my assumptive world, my beliefs, my priorities, how I saw the world, what I valued, was the transition of my 18-year-old daughter, Janine, on March 1st, 2003. She died of alveolar rhabdomyosarcoma, which is a very rare and aggressive muscle tissue cancer. And she transitioned about 10 months after giving birth to our first grandchild, Brianna. And Brianna is now 22 years old and has a daughter of her own. So in terms of this whole cycle of life, Tina, I became a grandfather at 47, a parent who had experienced the death of a child at 47, and a great grandparent at 65. And in between, it's been a 20-year journey of rediscovery, in many ways rebirth, as a result of the teachings I've learned with the support of others and on my own, that have helped me move through grief and have allowed me to feel at peace and blessed with what I have in my life, and feel at peace with my daughter's transition, knowing that my daughter is always going to be a part of me and that I have that continued bond with her in spirit that will last until I transition.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, it's not awesome, but it's awesome how it all came to be that way for you. That's very, very nice how, you know, you feel like you're not totally left without her, having the others in your life.
And, you know, is it the life that I envisioned leading when I got married over 40 years ago? No. But, you know, one of the things that I tell individuals is that we go in with this misconception that life is always going to be fair, and life isn't always going to be fair. Life is not fair. The measure of our lives is what we do, how we transcend the challenges that are presented. And do we have the choice after that? Are we going to make the choice to reengage in a purpose-driven life in spite of what's happened? That's how we measure the quality of our life. We're not going to leave this world unscathed. We're always going to go through some type of challenges. Some challenges are more, to others, more profound or more challenging than others. However, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you don't put a measuring stick on tragedy. Everybody's idea of tragedy is different. And as bereavement support specialists, as therapists, we need to meet everybody at their worst tragedy.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be mine. The pain of my worst tragedy can help me align with the pain of somebody else's worst tragedy. I've experienced my own worst tragedy, and I can sit with an individual and theirs.
Yeah. Now, with the topic being over the holidays, how would you say it's affected you? What, you know, it's been a while for you, but if you started like around the first 5 years, how was working around the holidays difficult for you? what did it do to what it does now?
I think if you look at the first few years, I'm glad you framed it like that, Tina, because I don't talk about stages of grief. I talk about phases. In the early phase, I would think you would probably look at within that first 5 years. The holidays were not really one of my favorite times of the year. I was never a holiday person to begin with for a variety of different reasons. But after my daughter transitioned, the holidays became more stressful. The days particularly leading up to the actual holiday, whether it was Christmas, whether it was New Year's, were typically more stressful than the day itself. And for a lot of your listeners out there, if they're experiencing that progression of grief now, where the days prior to the holiday are more intense, that's normal. It's like for me, when the holiday came, it was a relief that it was over.
Yeah.
But there were, you know, you take a look at the natural things that happen during a loss, how our body's affected physically, how our thought process is affected, how our ability to engage in a world that's different is compromised. Those all become more intensified during the holiday. The holiday makes it very apparent, and we're more apparent of the losses that we experience during the holiday, particularly when we see everybody else celebrating around us. And particularly those first holidays, there's a lot of questions. Do I do the Christmas dinner? Do I do the holiday dinner? What steps can I take for self-care? Are people going to be upset if I don't show up at gatherings that I normally showed up with when my loved one was around? How much flexibility can I give myself if all of a sudden I go to a gathering and realize that, geez, I don't want to stay. I just want to limit my time. And these are all questions and concerns and fears that individuals have going into those first holidays. And all of that is normal. And for me, one of the things I learned to do was do the things that I felt that I was capable of doing, and the things that I did not want to touch or I couldn't touch, I backed away. And even if it caused concern from some individuals who said, well, come on, reengage in life. Come on, just no. Grief is very disempowering. When we experience a loss, we're disempowered on so many levels. And for me, it's like, do what you can to empower yourself. If it means that you're going to shut off the lights, you're going to turn off your phone, you're going to
hide
in a closet, whatever you want to do, stay in your pajamas for half the day, whatever that's going to be, if that's self-care for you, do it. Because a lot of individuals their expectations are going to try to drive how you grieve or what you should do. And the bottom line is you have the power, and you should be empowered to see your grief through your own eyes and to do your grief journey as you see fit. I can walk it with you, but I can't walk it for you. And I'm not going to try to walk it and tell you that you have to walk it my way. We all grieve in different ways, and we all need to respect that. And especially during the holidays, people are going to respond differently. They're going to grieve differently. They're going to react differently. And as long as they're not hurting themselves or anybody else, it's all good. We need to be able to sit with that, witness that, support it, and just
allow it.
Their pain and allow it. Exactly. Allow it. Absolutely.
Do you think you get more pushed over the holidays to attend different holiday things because you're a man and I'm just looking at a man and a woman's version. Do you think it's more recognized that what's your problem, Dave? Because, you know, it's the holidays and are you coming, not coming kind of thing?
Yeah, I think there's a different set of expectations that are placed on men's grief than there are women's grief. If you take a look, and I've told one of the things that my students have told me, if we're just looking at like a heteronormative relationship, male-female relationship as the example, I've had female students of mine at Utica University come up to me and say, and just females in general that I've met, my husband or my boyfriend doesn't talk about their feelings. Well, good luck. A lot of men don't. You're going to have better luck getting them to build a rocket ship and fly it to Mars than you're going to have a direct discussion about feelings. But here's the thing that is a myth. Men and women feel just as intensely, but we deal with it differently. with men, we may distract ourselves from our feelings. And I tell, you know, we get busy, we do stuff. If we're starting to feel out of sorts, if we're starting to feel sad, or we want to cry, we do that privately, or we do something to distract ourselves from it. Because growing up, we've heard, you know, suck it up, be tough, take care of your family. If you share your feelings, it's a sign of weakness. Now, for women, it is more than okay for them to share their feelings and to talk about their feelings. For men, it's taboo. Yeah. But here's the thing. Men are in their thoughts quite a bit. I mean, I'm in my head quite a bit. If you ask a man what they're thinking, and they say, boy, this sucks. And we'll say that. This totally sucks. You can ask them, well, how does that make you feel? And then they can start talking, well, I'm angry. I'm sad. This is really pissing me off, you know. But you have to get to their thoughts first. And here's the other thing. During the holidays, a lot of times, you'll hear things like, well, geez, my husband is uncomfortable with my tears. And they're not just totally uncomfortable with your tears because tears bother them. It's the significance of those tears that matter. For me, and I'll use myself as an example, my daughter had an incurable disease. She was stage 4 when she was diagnosed. We were told that there was no cure. I knew immediately after that consult that I was going to be a member of a club that I had no intention of ever wanting to join.
Yeah.
And
how long was that period of time, Dave?
That was about 10 months from diagnosis to her transition.
Oh.
I forgot.
That's a hard 10 months.
That's a hard 10 months. So, you know, it's just, she had an incurable disease, but yet for 3.5 years, I held myself hostage to the fact that I should have done something to prevent it. And I should have been more mindful. I said, if we caught this earlier, maybe we could have done something. Maybe she could have survived. I put this all on me. And every time I saw my wife cry or her surviving brothers in pain, it reminded me of the fact that I failed miserably in my role as a parent. And that's what those tears signified to me, was a total abject failure of my role as a parent. Not the fact that, you know, your tears bother me. It was the significance of those tears and how it impacted the perception of my role as a protector. And all of this, Tina, gets intensified during the holidays, every bit of it. And, you know, I mean,
why do you think that is, Dave? Why does it get intensified, do you think?
I think, one, the holidays are stressful in and of itself, with having to, you know, do Christmas shopping, to
get-togethers,
and to think about preparing meals. But the other thing is that there are so many memories attached with holidays, and so many holiday traditions that are associated with our loved ones that. Yeah. You know, I think it just intensifies. The absence becomes, I think, more pronounced and more in our faces. For me, Christmas in the beginning years was a reminder that my daughter was dealing with her own mortality. And every Christmas, I would remember this.
We lost him for a second here. Hold on. He's going to come back in a second. He froze.
Sorry about that.
Sorry. Yep.
That's okay. Her significant other, my daughter Janine, her daughter Brianna, their cat cohabitated with our two cats, my two sons, my wife and me, in a one level ranch. For those 10 months. So we had everybody under one roof. And there was a time that we found ourselves alone, which was very rare when you've got, you know, three four-leggeds and about 7 two-legged individuals, you know, living in our
floating
house.
Floating around.
So she looked at me and she said, you know, Dad, I did a lot for everybody for Christmas this year. And the only reason I did that is because I'm not sure I'm going to be here next year. She knew she wasn't going to be here next year. Yeah. But she had to tell me that. But what I looked at later on was that it was actually her telling me that was a gift because it prevented me from asking or from me answering her question, am I going to die?
Yeah.
She basically told me, I know this is going to happen. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm going to make the most of the time that I have left. But for years, that would haunt me because I would think about that. And I was, you know, at 18 years old, she was coming to terms with her own mortality. When most 18-year-olds are thinking about who they're going to the junior prom with, what college they're going to, she's thinking about how many years she's got left.
Or what Christmas you have left.
Or what Christmas you have left. And that always, but then as I got progressed in my grief, as I embraced different perspectives, as I got more support, as I began to do the work of grief, I understood that that conversation was actually a very intimate moment between us because she said, I know I'm not going to be here next year. So this is why I did what I want to do. And I'm going to do this because I love you that much where I'm going to prevent you from asking me the question, am I going to die? You don't need to, you already know where I'm at with everything. And
good it for was, her. Yeah. That was awfully strong and brave of her.
Yeah. She, there were other moments too, that another moment that I could share with everybody. If you're interested and you got some time, that did that. So,
did you ever feel like some people like to set a setting for the person that is gone at the table? Did you ever feel like you needed to do that? Or would it be taboo for you?
Could you repeat that question again?
Sure.
Tina, because I think we kind of got blacked out again with the internet, so
yes,
it was rebooting. So could you repeat that question again? I'm sorry.
Did you and your wife ever feel like you wanted to set the table for, is it Brianne?
Janine.
Did you ever feel like you wanted to do that when she was gone?
No, that wasn't something we did. But, you know, one of the things that we try to do is, you know, we would try to light a candle. We would light a candle for we would, you know, just talk about memories we had of her on certain, like on her birthday, which is in April. Her favorite thing to do is to watch the movie Grease and eat garlic pizza. So one birthday I had garlic pizza and I watched Grease.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, so, and those are things that people can do over the holidays. They can certainly set a place for their transitioned loved one. There, another colleague of mine had this great idea where you put a memory box right in, you know, let's say in the entryway as people are coming in for dinner, have some slips of paper at the pen, have them write a favorite memory about the person who is absent, who is transitioned. And at the end of the meal, they just pick out slips and they randomly talk about memories. They could do things like plant a tree. They can make a donation to their favorite charity. Even with Christmas cards, some people say, well, geez, I feel funny putting the name of my transitioned loved one down. Well, you can do something like from the Roberts family. That includes everybody. Sometimes I've had individuals that have had gifts under the tree from their transitioned loved one, knowing this is what they would have bought me. And that's also a way to keep the bond going. It's very something simple as Christmas morning. Sit down, light some incense, listen to some of the favorite music that you shared with your transitioned loved one. Bring them to memory and see if that doesn't bring a feeling of peace. And the biggest thing for me is to understand what your capabilities are. Ask for help. If you're used to doing a big meal by yourself and you can't do it this year, ask for help.
Yeah.
If you can find a place Christmas Eve, do your maid dinner Christmas Eve, go out for Christmas Eve dinner if you can plan that, you know.
Or maybe start a new Christmas tradition.
Yeah.
Go for Chinese food on Christmas Eve or something. Like, I think it's the change that maybe might be beneficial too, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, I know people, Tina, that have gone to Florida the first Christmas because they didn't want to be in the area. You spoke of a Chinese dinner or Chinese meal. There was a woman, and you know, one of the things with early grief that we both know about is forgetfulness, really, and you know, we have brain fog.
Yeah.
She forgot to take a turkey out of the oven because she did that every year. And she forgot to take a turkey out of, excuse me, she forgot to take a turkey out of the freezer. And by the time she remembered, it was too late. So they went out and they had a they went to a Chinese buffet for Christmas Day, and they made that a tradition, and that was a new tradition. The other thing is sometimes we need to create new traditions or incorporate our transition loved ones into, you know, keep their existing traditions, but yet blend that in with new traditions as well, too. Symbolically, that's a way that we can integrate our grief and, you know, recreate a world that is reflective of our reality now.
And I'm surprised even losing pets is so difficult, and it truly is. And I didn't realize when some people say, you know, if you lost your cat or your dog, it means a lot. And I didn't realize that it did until someone had said to me on the show that it's based around the love that you had for the person or the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the grief comes from, is from all that love that you had.
Well, and the other thing too, Tina, and this is what also can make grief very intense during a holiday. Now, I'll give you an example. My daughter Janine predeceased her two favorite cats, Bootsy and Angel.
Oh.
And in my website, Bootsy and Angel Books LLC, the Bootsy and Angel are her two cats. Bootsy was a Christmas gift from her best friend, and Angel was a rescue cat. She predeceased them. So when Bootsy transitioned, one of the things that, you know, I started thinking of my daughter again, you know, and one of the things that we need to be aware of is if we're doing an overall assessment of loss, do pet loss assessment too and see what the connection was to their transition loved ones. If that their loved one predeceased their pet and their pet dies, there's going to be multiple layers of grief going on, because the memories of the pet will evoke memories of the person that they were connected to, and also will make grief more intensified during specific milestone events and holidays as well, too. And that's something to be aware of. Pets represent unconditional love. You know, they love us when we don't love ourselves. And Bootsy became my caretaker after Janine transitioned. He would get me up. He would get me moving. He'd get me up at 4:30 in the morning. He wouldn't let me go back to sleep. He did. I said, Bootsy, come on. It's 4:30. Meow, 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 meow. He just got me moving. He loved me when I had trouble loving myself
after
everything
that
had happened. So that's the other thing with pets as well, too. And pets sometimes fall into the category of disenfranchised grief because people say, hey, you can get another dog.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can't get another kid. You can't get another parent. You're not going to get another dog or cat to replace the love and the significance in your life that you have. You can't do that. And that's one of the worst things you can say to anybody. Well, you're going to get another dog.
Yeah.
No, you can't. This, you know, and having
like Hope, survive, like yeah. Hope said yesterday when she said, well, you have another, somebody said, well, you have another, good thing you have another son.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really?
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, Tina, a lot of people don't mean to say stupid stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'll do it with the greatest of intent because they think they've learned that's what's comforting. Well, it isn't. And so during the holidays, don't say things like, well, God needed another angel. God won't give you any more than you could bear. Somebody said that to me, and I said, he already did. He took me, you know, my daughter's gone. This is more than I can bear.
Yeah.
You know, so... I guess God needed another angel, or things are going to be okay. Well, no, they're not. Things aren't okay. And how do you know they're going to be okay?
Yeah.
Don't ask somebody how they're doing unless you're prepared for a long answer and you're prepared to sit with that answer, because how you're doing is a very complicated question to ask somebody who is grieving, especially during the holidays.
Yes.
Maybe make it like, how are you doing in this moment? How are you doing today? That may be more realistic.
Yes.
You know. It may be more realistic.
I was telling Hope yesterday on the show, for everybody that would like to know, that we have had part one and two, and you can get it on the YouTube channel. And this is part three that you're watching. But down below in the description box, I wanted to make sure that Dave has all his website linked down below as well, and mine also for your backup plan. So make sure you like, share, and subscribe, and share it with somebody that you know that is grieving, that it could help. What a great Christmas gift that you could give somebody to say, here's a series of videos that Maybe mm-hmm. something resonates that Dave said, or Hope said, or Cindy said, or whatever it might be, or I said. But what I did like in what I was explaining to Hope was that I had a counselor on one of our shows, and she had mentioned, and I've gravitated to this ever since, that she said, when you call someone up and ask them or stop by, don't say, how are you doing today? Because that, for a person who isn't doing well, that just makes you want to just start blurting out crying mm-hmm. it right away. So what about saying, on a scale from 1 to 10, what are you today? So then you know when you're calling that they're a 1 or a 2, how to treat it. Mm-hmm. And if they're a 9 or a 10, then you also know how to treat it. I think that's a good way of talking or sharing how you're feeling.
Yeah, I think that is too. I mean, empowers people to give you on a scale of 1 to 10. Well, I'm a 2 today. So at least you know where they're at.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, at least you know where they're at, and you know exactly how you need to proceed. And
yeah.
Maybe that day you just let them be who they need to be and what they need to be. And just,
yeah.
When I ask somebody, what do you need for, if they're like feeling like a 2 or a 3,
yeah.
What do you need from me in this moment? What,
yeah. Do you need, what do you now? Need from me today? Or what can I do yeah. today?
Yep. Yep. And maybe they just need a hug. And yeah. Maybe they just need you to be quiet and just sit with them.
Yeah.
And
or
let
take them for a walk.
Or take them for a walk. Yeah.
Whatever it might be.
Take them for a walk, or take them for ice cream, or take them for coffee. That's all they may need.
Yeah. Or down to the pet SPCA or something. Mm-hmm. Just maybe just go look at some pets or animals or whatever it might be. I totally agree. It's a tough time of year, because I find there's a lot of triggers out there. There's a lot of happiness. And when you're not that happy, it's a hard time.
Well, and especially Christmas music, a lot of times that's a trigger for individuals. A lot of times individuals will find themselves, they're driving their car, and all of a sudden a song might come on the radio that evokes memories of a transitioned loved one, and they find themselves crying uncontrollably on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And you know, individuals say, I wish I could control that. Well, you can't. You can't control, you just have to roll with it. It's especially in early grief, it's an emotional roller coaster with a lot of ups, with a lot of downs. And you have to ride out the downs. You have to work through the pain. You have to be present for it. You have to experience it. As much as it sucks, we have to, because if we try to suppress it or run away from it, it's just going to keep coming back. And the message is, I'm not going away, so you need to find a way to deal with me, whether it's through support, whether it's through journaling, whether it's through, you know, going to a support group, whatever you need, whatever suits your
coloring,
fancy.
Yep. Journaling.
Coloring, journaling, doodling, anything.
Exercise, whatever it is.
Yep. Exercise.
Meditation.
Yep.
Whatever. Yoga. Yoga. Dancing. Music.
Anything. Whatever's going to float your boat to get you through that moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
now tell me about being a dad and a husband. How did you find dealing with the holidays with your wife? How did that?
Well, first,
you're trying to be strong, I assume, for her.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that is that we came to an understanding of how we grieved. She grieved very differently than me. I just basically learned to respect it, to try to support her in it, to find out what she needed from me at a particular moment. And she learned to support me. We just understood what our manner of grief was, how we processed it. We respected it. We didn't try to change it. And that actually helped grow us closer, because we were able to, gave us another level of communication and understanding.
Yeah.
And the holidays now are kind of, you know, it's just something that, you know, we've integrated our grief, and we know we are so connected with our daughter, with her spirit, with who she is a part of me. I've integrated the best parts of her as part of me. So she's with me during the holidays. I know where she is. She's inside of me. She's within me. She's living a life of pure love and bliss on the other side. Does that mean I don't have days of sadness or periods of sadness? Or no, I still have those yearnings.
Yeah.
I still want her here for specific moments or days that I still miss her. But I, those moments are few and far between. You know, they've, but, and they always have something to teach me. And it's always another way for me that it's like, wow, you know, I'm experiencing these feelings because it's another way for me to remember the love that we had. I don't look at that as being a bad thing anymore, something I avoid. It's kind of, I've embraced kind of the yin and the yang of grief at this point, where before I just wanted the yin
to go away.
Or I wanted one of those to go away. But then, but now
I know I could make billions of dollars if I could have a switch that you could, as soon as the grief started, you could dial it down. Mm-hmm. I know I could be a billionaire with that one.
Yep.
Because I really think that there's so many triggers. So I'm assuming as a man, you know, you're always trying to push them down and be strong for your boys and for your wife and your job. And I can't imagine how tough that must be.
Yeah, I mean, the structure, and I'm a firm advocate for structure and grief. You have something that, because that can give you some structure, give you some reason to move. It's always, and B, it's a good thing, because eventually it won't be out of survival that you'll be doing it. It'll be something that you'll rediscover your passions as you continue to work through your grief. So I think structure is good. And I also think we need to balance structure with being with ourselves and reflecting and experiencing all of the emotions that are, that occur with grief during the holidays and throughout the year. Because, you know, the thing is that, you know, you'll hear in society, you've heard this, well, you got to be happy. Well, happiness by itself isn't the key to fulfillment. I think being genuine with our emotions, understanding who we are, being able to sit with somebody who's as, just as sad, as has as many sad days as happy days, or who's angry, those are all, the totality of those emotions make us more genuine. They make us more feeling, and I think they make us more compassionate. Because some of the saddest people I know turned into the most compassionate people that I've ever run into.
Absolutely.
And sadness can morph into that if we allow it to, and we don't look at it as necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of makes up this whole mosaic of the path that we walk: happiness, sadness, anger, yearning. It's all serves a purpose and all makes us very genuine and makes us very compassionate human beings in the long run.
It does, but what goes on with a man's brain when your wife is having a rough day? What can you do for her? Because you're hurting too.
Yeah, what goes through my brain is her hurt becomes a reminder of my failure as a husband and as a father. So what I could do is turn that self, that beating myself up, and turn that kind of, you know, that kind of into what can I do to help? What can I do to
into a strength?
Into a strength. I can just sit there with her and say, what do you need from me at this particular moment? And that can drive me, that allows me to be present, and that allows me to redefine my role as a protector and redefine my role as a husband. It's like, well, rather than basically beat myself up for something I couldn't change that was beyond my control, what can I do now to translate that into compassion and love in the moment? What can I do now to help her find a solution, or help her find a path to that, to her sad
to that
moment.
Switch.
Yeah, to that switch, yeah. Yeah, to help either turn that switch off or channel that switch into something else. What can I do to support that?
Yeah.
What can
do
I do?
Do you find it worse for your wife as well over these holidays? Because I say, as soon as Remembrance Day finishes, it's just like the whole switch of Christmas starts. So
yeah,
it's a long month.
Yeah, it is a long month. I mean, I think we both, you know, she's experienced her share of loss as well as me. And I think we've both come to an understanding around Christmas that we understand what our new reality is. And we try to express gratitude and be grateful for who we have in our lives. Yeah, and you know, the fact that they're present, the fact that, you know, we're still alive, you know.
Yeah.
For many times I felt guilty for being alive. You know, that, and my daughter had transitioned, you know. There was a quote on forgiveness, and I think by one of Canada's favorite sons, Neil Peart, the late great drummer for the rock group Rush, who wrote about his own challenges with loss. And I'm sure you're very familiar with his journey. But he talked about forgiveness, and we'll see if I can remember this. He said, there would be no peace for me, no life for me, unless I learned to forgive life for what it had done to me, learn to forgive others for being alive, and eventually learn to forgive myself for being alive. And that always stuck with me, is that I had to forgive the hand of fate for dealing me the hand of cards that it did. I had to forgive others for being alive, because I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, I had to, but I also had to forgive myself more so for being alive. And I want to qualify that. I would never, when I saw an intact family with father and daughter, I would never wish for what had happened to happen to them. It would be like, damn, that should have been me.
Yeah. You know,
that should have been me. That should have been my family. It was just like, I looked at that as just a total injustice that I was dealt with the hand of cards. But I had to forgive life for doing that to me.
And I think it's the big why.
Yeah.
The big why me.
Yeah. We have to go through that, especially during the holidays. Those intensify, you know, why am I left walking this path? Why am I left walking this path? Why is my life the way it is right now? What if I did this? What if I did that?
Right.
And eventually the only answer that would have satisfied me is that somebody coming down from the great beyond, God or his representative, saying, we're going to give you your life back. We made a mistake. And once I realized that that wasn't going to happen, I sat in the quiet. I quieted my mind, stopped answering the questions. And then I knew exactly the path that I needed to take to be able to work
get over that hump
and get to the other side of grief. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think we ever get to the other side of grief, but we have more tools to deal with it, I guess.
Yep. And getting to the other side of grief, for me, means accepting that I'm living in a world that's different.
Yeah.
That's going to
always. It's this way.
It's this way, but I'm going to re-engage in life in spite of the way my world looks.
Yeah.
So that's, for me, what working through the other side of grief is. It's never about closure to a life. It's never about closure to a relationship. It's about accepting that this is the way things are. I can't change it. So I'm going to make the most of what at the time that I have left to engage in a purpose-driven and meaningful life.
Right. Because let's face it. I mean, for example, cancer, heart attack, or diseases, they don't have a time frame of, well, it's not going to hit you over the holidays. I mean, there's a lot of people in cancer clinics during December and January, and other holidays for that matter. But there's no time. And it's just more difficult during these times. What about your sons? How did that have an effect on the family? Are they older or younger?
Janine was a middle child. My son Dan is the oldest. My son Matt was the youngest. Matt, I think it affected his initial stage into an introduction into the teenage years, because he was one of the caregivers for my daughter. When her significant other was going to work, he and my wife had something to do. He would take care, he would take care of Janine.
Yeah.
My oldest son was away at college. He wanted to come home, but my daughter told him, look, you need to follow your dream. You don't need to be here. And I know they dealt with their own pain and their own grieving the loss of that relationship, because sibling grief is very different than parental grief. There's a lot of times siblings get overlooked in the process during the holidays, and because everybody's worried about the parents. They dealt with their grief in their own way. They've turned out to be very, very fine young men. I'm proud of them both. And they dealt with some very difficult times. They dealt with my wife's and my grief as well as their own, and they were always supportive. They just turned out to be very, very good young men. I'm proud of them both.
Good.
I'm proud of them both. And you know, they honor their Jeanine in their own way and they remember her in their own way. And, but again, don't forget the siblings that during the holidays or any other time. Don't forget.
Absolutely.
They need, their grief can become disenfranchised if it's not acknowledged.
What was your Christmas, what was your Christmas holiday like for the first 2 years?
The first year was, I was kind of in a fog. The first
both
year,
both you one, and your wife were in a fog.
Yeah, the first year was, one of the things I remember is that Jeanine was a hospice patient and hospice staff came over with Christmas gifts for my granddaughter and for her daughter, which I remember that as being a beacon of light during a great period of darkness that first year. The second year was really excruciating because in many ways, the second year is worse than the first in grief, because the second year, the reality of what you're facing hits in. The first year is kind of surreal. And the second year was just really tough. I just wanted to fast forward to, I wanted to go from like Thanksgiving right to like the middle of March and the third year.
Exactly. You know, I always said, I wish I could just go to bed after Remembrance Day and wake up at the end of January.
Yeah, me too.
that would be perfect.
I wanted to wake up probably like in May of that following, of the third year, and get through March and
April. When the weather changes,
yeah. Just, you know, the darkness of winter was exacerbated during that second year, because the second year was just so excruciating on so many levels. And it is for so many people that I've sat with. The second year is worse than the first.
I think the second year is more angry. You have more angry feelings.
And I think more emptiness as well, because you realize that this is my world going forward. That, you know, there's no do-overs.
Yeah, it's the fact. Yeah, it's facing the fact.
Yes, reality sinks in addition to the shock and the surrealness. And it's just like, this is my life now.
Yeah.
And what am I going to do about it?
Did you and your wife have trouble with people inviting you out for Christmas events? Did you feel that was a problem?
No, it wasn't, because the events we went to were kind of more family oriented. They understood what was going on. And it doesn't get like this year for Christmas, we'll go to my son's house and then we'll go to her family's house for Christmas. And beyond that, you know, we may see some friends over the holiday, but it was never an issue then. And it's not an issue now. But one of the things that I learned and I tell people is be flexible. If you go to a gathering in early grief and during the holidays and you think you want to stay, you're all excited about it, you get there and it's like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Give yourself an out and leave and let individuals know in advance, look, this is where I'm at. Today I want to go, but I may wake up tomorrow and decide I don't want to go. And you just need to understand that. It's going to be a product of where I am right now in my grief and where I am with the holidays.
I think we have to start recognizing and talking about grief in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't know what's going on in your head.
No.
And I've had so many people over the holidays that it could be the cashier at Walmart or the grocery store, and they're so bubbly and happy, and waitress or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have all good intentions. But it doesn't feel good on the other side when you're dealing with grief. It's almost like my daughter used to watch, what's his name? The Neighborhood.
Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers. I want to, what did the song go?
Oh, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
But, are you my neighbor? No.
Yeah. Would you be my neighbor?
Would you be my neighbor? That's it. It's kind of that same kind of feeling.
I would sing with you, but I'm afraid we're going to lose live stream viewers if I do. So I'm not going to sing. I'll just sound the words out.
Well, my oldest daughter, when she was young, she used to watch, half the show would come on. And as soon as he said that, she would sit there and put her hands on her waist and say, "I am not your neighbor." Well, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I laughed because it reminded me of going through the cashier, and the cashier says, "Oh, you know, Christmas is so close. Are you getting ready? Do you have some exciting things to do?" Or it's like, don't talk to me about this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to avoid it, you know, that kind of thing. And I felt like my daughter did when Mr. Rogers said, be my neighbor. And I always kind of, then it would make me giggle because that would remind you. Mm-hmm. So I guess you can just try to use whatever you possibly can to get over those moments.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's whatever is going to find, you're going to find peace in the moment doing. You do.
Yes. Yes.
And you don't have to justify it. You don't have to explain it. If you cry, and you will cry, you don't have to explain your tears to anybody. I facilitate a once a month general bereavement support group here in the area. And one of the, for new members, I tell them crying is allowed. We have tissues, and I know the flood insurance is paid, so just let it go. You don't need to have to explain it. You don't have to apologize for it. What you've been through is the worst tragedy of your life. Let it go. It's healing. Tears can be healing. Let it go.
And from a man's point of view, how do you talk to men about that?
Well, you know, one of the things I found, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, I can use myself as my own experience. I become more okay with my tears. I mean, I can watch Field of Dreams. I can watch that and start bawling like a baby at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Certain episodes, certain commercials will get the tears streaming. So I think the thing is to be authentic with your feelings. You don't need to necessarily cry to do that, but just being authentic in the moment, let people know where you're at. Let people know how you're feeling. And as far as tears, it's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. If we can just, and if that's an honest reflection of how we're feeling in the moment, and it always is, then you see that as a sign of strength. And I would say that to men, I would say it to women, I would say it to anybody. And there, and even though we talk about basically very male and female oriented ways of grieving, there are some females that I know that are very closed off with their feelings, and some men that are more intuitive. In fact, I think Ken Doka, one of the more foremost known thanatologists, talked about intuitive males and instrumental males. The instrumental males do the traditional male grief walk. The instrumental or the intuitive males are more feeling oriented. They're more emotive. And so maybe in 75% of the cases, you're going to see the typical male stereotypes or expectations around grief in female, but 25% of the cases, it could be different. So everybody's different. But the biggest thing is being genuine with your feelings, not being afraid to say, I'm angry, not being able to say, I'm sad today, I'm yearning, I'm confused. And understand that it's going to be supported as opposed to ridiculed or to invalidated.
Right. Because it's a true feeling.
And, yep.
I hope people are changing when it comes around that topic. I hope so. I'm not sure if they are yet. I don't know if we're at that level yet, talking about grief in the scope of things. I can't imagine in the war zones what that PTSD and the loss of losing family members or loved ones are like. Mm-hmm. We don't experience that here in Canada and the United States. But I can't imagine what they deal with. It must be extraordinary.
Yeah.
But it's not saying don't ever compare yourself from one to a different person, because what you're dealing with is yours. And it's not easy. It doesn't matter how you look at it, I think.
No.
And like you said, let it flow. What kind of final message would you like to give to the listeners?
Well, there's an
old saying.
Words of Dave's wisdom. Well, let's see what I can come up with that might qualify as wisdom for everybody and for you, and for you and your listeners. So first of all, there's an old Chinese proverb, a single beam cannot support a great house. So you can't do grief by yourself. Get as much support as you can from people who understand, people who are willing to sit with your worst pain, not only during the holidays, but throughout the years.
Right.
Secondly, show grace to yourself. know what your limitations are, know what you can do, know what you can't do. Ask for help from family members if it comes to preparing the Christmas dinner, the holiday dinners. You know, talk to your family about how can we incorporate the memory of our loved one. How can we? What's our best? What? How do we want to remember our transition loved ones during the holiday? Show
that's
grace.
That's a good one because I think it could be nice to get everybody's feelings about the whole situation.
And it gets everybody talking. And it gets it out in the open. And show grace to yourself. If there's a situation that you can't deal with or you're unable to deal with, feel free to show grace to yourself and back away from it. If people don't understand, that's on them. You right. have to do what is best for you. Don't hesitate to experience joyful moments. Don't feel guilty about experiencing joy. Joy and sadness are going to coexist for us anyway, and right. particularly through the rest of our years after grieving the loss of a loved one, that's going to happen. Just understand that that's part of the deal, and don't let people tell you to grieve in any particular way. That grieve in the way that's best for you, and allow yourself that flexibility to just back away from events or leave an event that you wanted to go to and just say, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and show
be okay
that,
with that.
And be okay with that. So it's a matter of doing what you need to do to get through the holiday. Maybe how do we incorporate the memory of our loved one into our existing traditions? How do we create new traditions? And if push comes to shove, if you want to go to a Chinese buffet for Christmas, by all means, do that. It's whatever's going to go for it. It's whatever's going to get you through that moment. Because it's your walk. If nobody else is going to walk it with you or for you.
Yeah.
They'll walk it with you. But nobody can walk your walk the way you want, the way they want you to. You walk it the way you need to.
At that time.
At that time, absolutely. So so that's what I could say. That's in a nutshell, that's what I would pass on as kind of my final message to your listeners and viewers for the holiday.
Oh, that's super. I think that's a summary of basically everything that you've talked about today. So that's awesome. Well, thank you, Dave. I can't believe it's the time already. I love talking about this topic. Even though it could bring tears to my eyes, absolutely. It's a tough time.
It is. And just remember, our loved ones are never far away. And I'm going to leave you with this one quote from Maury Schwartz from the book Tuesdays with Maury: death ends a life, not a relationship. Our loved ones will always be with us in one way, shape,
nice.
Or form.
Well, absolutely. I like looking for signs that I do enjoy doing.
Me too.
Because I know that they're there. It's just a matter of being open to seeing it.
Absolutely. And being open to redefining or recreating the relationship in a different way.
Right. No, that's awesome. Thank you, Dave, for coming on. Dave's new to our show, so we're going to have him come back at some point and talk a little bit more about grief, because you do have a lot of information from your groups that you put together and your podcasts and things like that. So thank you so very much. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show.
And thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it, and I enjoy talking about this topic and helping others. So everybody, you know, we aren't Superman, even though we act like we are, because nothing's going to happen, right, Dave? I mean,
nope.
Men think that all the time, don't they? Nothing's going to happen to us.
Yeah, like when I saw individuals, families that that have lost their child, I felt sad and but I said, thankfully, that's not me.
Yes.
And then it became me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I said, well, that line isn't going to fly anymore. Now it's
no.
Got to figure out what I'm going to do with all of this, how I'm going to work through it. And how I'm going to, re-engage in life again.
Deal with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we look at the last 5 years in the world around us, shootings in the schools and work accidents and car accidents and overdoses and the pandemic. I mean, we're losing so many young people to the overdoses and, of course, the pandemic. not to mention these crazy wars and the natural disasters going around us, wildfires and floods and hurricanes and even the volcano that's happening right now. But don't forget to smash that like button and share it with others that, you know, it could be a very special gift to share this with someone that's grieving, that you know that that could really be able to deal with this. And if you are thinking about that special someone right now, you don't know how many birthdays you're going to have left. You don't know how many Christmases they're going to have left with you. Make sure you reach out to them, call them, knock on their door, FaceTime them, whatever it means, and tell them how much you love and care about them, because you really don't know. Need to take a deep breath there for a second. But like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan till you get punched in the face. And that's very true. You don't realize, I have talked to so many people, oh, I have my will, I have my power of attorney done, but they don't realize about all the other stuff that we have to do as well. And you don't realize it until you are given that job to do after the person passes away, and how much more you could have done beforehand that would have made your life a lot easier. And that's why I created your backup plan to start with, to make that life a bit easier. So that being said, I always end our show with Carol Burnett. And I know, Dave, you know who Carol Burnett is.
I do.
I'm so glad we had this time together just to have a laugh or sing a song. Seems we just get started, and before you know it, comes the time we have to say so long. So long, everybody. It was great having you on the show, Dave. Thank you again so very much. Thank you, listeners. You're welcome. Thank you, listeners. And I will see you on the other side when we get together again. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe to our show so that you know when our shows are coming up next. And have a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody. And stay safe and be kind. See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.